Today, on this episode of A Place for Everyone, I'm speaking with Amy Cox, who is the Chief Housing and Homelessness Response Officer for the City of Colorado Springs. This brand new position in our city is the nexus of two vital issues for our community. I'm looking forward to educating our listeners about this important topic.
You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
Before we dive into today's topic, I would like to thank our host, Studio 809, and the wonderful office space at The Next Us. Please visit and consider sharing it with your friends and other entrepreneurs. Welcome to A Place for Everyone, the Pikes Peak Region's podcast about housing, homelessness, recovery, and resiliency. The podcast is brought to you by Homeward Pikes Peak. Our mission is to empower individuals and families to access stable housing, increase mental health, recovery, and achieve economic stability. I'm your host, Beth Rolstad, and the CEO and a social worker. I'm so happy to have Amy here today to discuss our community's issues around homelessness and housing. For one reason is that we go way back. We've known each other for almost 15 years, and I believe she's lived here almost 30 years, which is incredible. Did you really start working for the city in 2002?
Yeah, and that followed a six-year stint with the county, El Paso County Parks.
Wow, so you've got deep roots. So exciting. I also know that you've had a really cool job in San Diego that was working on strategic issues around homelessness. And San Diego, that's impressive. It's our eighth largest city in America.
It was a really great opportunity, largely because a lot of people want to be in San Diego. The population of people experiencing homelessness is quite large. Mm-hmm. And so we got to test a lot of really cool ideas.
Yeah, that's neat. Well, I hope you brought back some of those good ideas to Colorado. So I have a bunch of questions for you. We may wander a little bit, but I think that, you know, we'll have fun discussing this. So let's dive in. Would you like to share a little bit about your personal story and how you got to where you are now, and why do you care about homelessness and housing for our Pikes Peak region?
Well, you know, it's a story that is sort of both lived experience and professional experience. Now, I started working in housing and homelessness, not because I was a social worker, but because I had a love for vibrant public spaces, and we can't have vibrant public spaces if people are forced to live in those spaces.
True.
And so through the work that I had done with both the City of Colorado Springs Parks Department and in community development, I did a stint as the City Council Administrator for the City of Colorado Springs. I just saw this need for really building that community and addressing some of those issues. It was Mayor Bach that asked me to join him in his leadership to address homelessness in particular. Mm-hmm. Before that, though, you know, I grew up in Colorado Springs. My mother, I had a single mother, very, very low income. We grew up in Southeast Colorado Springs. And my mom wasn't able to make a lot of contributions, you know, donations to nonprofits and such, but we brought in a lot of people into our home who were experiencing homelessness or who would otherwise experience homelessness. She always taught us that we needed to pay our rent or our mortgage first, because once you became homeless, it became a lot more difficult. You could get support for utilities, you could get support for food, you could get support for clothing, but once you became homeless, all of a sudden, qualitatively, you were considered a different kind of person.
So true.
Well, and there were times where I would ask, I'm like, do we have to pay the rent this month, right? It's cold, like, can we turn on the heat? And it would be just put on another sweater, you know? So I had that personal experience, and I often found in conversations, especially around public spaces, trails or parks, that there was a lot of misunderstanding about poverty and homelessness. So it all of that sort of converged when I joined Mayor Bach to initiate what was then called the Initiative to End Homelessness in Colorado Springs.
Yeah.
And to build the rescue mission and to begin to build permanent supportive housing and to strengthen our continuum of care, all things that we'll talk about.
Yeah, that's great. What a great history. I love how it's braided with personal experience and a vision for what makes a healthy community. And I think we can all agree that vibrant public spaces include parks that we can recreate in and homes we can live in and city streets that we can enjoy, but for all people. And that really does mean all people, no matter what your income or status is.
Yes, 100%. What we'll find too in public space management, when homelessness becomes more and more visible, is that those spaces become less useful for all of us,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we begin to implement hostile architecture and pull out the benches and prohibit laying down in a park. And that's not good for any of us.
It's not good. And one of my biggest frustrations is closing public bathrooms in parks. And as anyone who's ever played outside with kids or families or used a trail, sometimes public bathrooms are locked and it is a real challenge for everybody in the community.
You know, I remember years ago, there was a leader in this community, and I won't name him, but he did some work on the Acacia Park bandshell bathrooms. And he said in his remarks when we dedicated those, and that was many years ago, was that as he got older, he needed a restroom.
Yeah.
So, right, it's not just for children. It's for all of us.
Yeah.
It's something we all do. So,
yes.
so that was his part of his motivation to make sure we had restrooms available in Acacia Park.
I love that. That's great. Well, taking into account, you know, your diverse background and the needs for housing, what do you think are some of those biggest challenges that we're seeing right now?
One of the big challenges is just an overall general need for housing. I mean, the housing crisis affects a lot of people. The city of Colorado Springs is currently partnering with El Paso County, and we've almost completed a housing needs assessment. And, you know, there's a need right now for 28,000 units in Colorado Springs. It's more like 39,000 if you add the county.
Wow. From apartments to it's multi-bedroom home.
It's all across the spectrum. And so, you know, housing is a foundation for how you build a life. And I will tell you that when I think about, you know, you start to get older and you start to reflect on, you know, what were the pivotal moments in your life? And I bought a house when I was 27 years old in Manitou Springs. I was able to put, it was $3,000 down.
That's amazing.
Money I was able to earn bartending for the down payment. I had a job with El Paso County Parks, and I was making $8 an hour as a receptionist. And I was able to buy a 1,200 square foot house in Manitou Springs. And I had a young daughter at the time, she was two. And that was the foundation of what has come to be Amy Cox. I mean, I think right there, my ability to stabilize my housing, because before then I was renting and moving around. I stabilized my housing. I invested in a community, and that investment in a community resulted in me participating on our parks board. For over 9 years, I was on the parks board, and we replaced all of the playgrounds in our community. I joined the city council. I was the mayor pro tem for Manitou Springs during the Great Recession, and we were able to do all of our downtown revitalization. I became, like, my identity became a part of that community, and it all started with having that stable place to live. And I will tell you, Beth, I still own that house, and I will be moving back into it. And it's one of those things that when I hear folks talk about starter homes, that was probably considered a starter home, but a house that cost $110,000 in 1998, that house is over $400,000 now. That's not a starter home for mm-hmm. folks. So anyway, I think that when I look at the housing needs across our community, it's really difficult for people at many income levels, but especially at the lower income levels and at the extremely low income levels, right? People who are living off of just with, you know, Social Security disability income, people who are living on their Social Security alone. It's really hard to find housing. And oftentimes we assume that there's something like qualitatively or wrong with people who can't afford housing. My mother moved back to the small town where she grew up in Kansas, rural Kansas, 1,200 people, because she could buy a home there for $15,000.
Wow.
And live off her Social Security. So she pays less than, you know, 30% of her income on housing, but that's what she had to do to get there. So I see real gaps in your area of expertise, permanent supportive housing, that supportive housing for people who need ongoing help. We're starting to see a little bit more increase in transitional housing, which I think is a good thing in this community. You know, that kind of fell out of favor with HUD for a few years and created some challenges in our community, but I see that coming back. And I just see really fewer opportunities for young people to say, hey, I want to plant some roots in this community and buy a home and be here and invest and make it a place where I want to raise my children.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. I was a little surprised by that number that we might need 39,000 units of housing to meet current need. And I'm sure the forecast for our demographic changes, we're still on track as the fastest growing county in Colorado. So we need to use this information to plan for the future. And how will we do that as a community? Will we plan smart growth across the economic continuum? And that's my goal. I hope I can be a part of that process.
Yeah, we did, following this housing needs assessment, we did receive a grant award from the state to continue with that action plan.
Good.
So that we could begin to create those, you know, those different opportunities, mm-hmm. those pathways. I mean, housing's fundamental to ending homelessness.
It is.
Right? It's also just critical to workforce, to our health. So it's important that we get on top of this.
Yeah. And we need housing in all sectors or parts of our community. We need it in our rural communities, you know, I'd say the more rural parts of our El Paso County, and we need the density downtown Colorado Springs, but we need affordability across that spectrum too. And I think people get kind of hung up on affordable housing and attainable housing and what is affordable. And like you mentioned, the starter home, you know, I have a 23-year-old daughter who is quite anxious that she may never be able to buy a home because she can't see herself ever having access to approximately $400,000. And she doesn't want to go into debt to that extent either. So it is scary for people who are college educated and on an upward trajectory. So it must be extremely frightening for our clients who are on limited and fixed incomes as well.
Yeah. And, you know, I think one of the challenges, one of the things I try and educate people on as well is what a crisis response system is. And we need the ability, if people become homeless, to be able to house folks again very quickly. And that requires a broad spectrum of housing availability, housing types. And people who are poor or low income are always going to be at risk. And we can't solve for all of that before we get people housed again. And I think that we often talk about, oh, well, if we just get them housed again, they'll be homeless again. Well, we don't see that so much in our community, do we? We see about 12% return, I think was in 2024, the longitudinal system analysis that comes out of the homeless management information system showed that in that year, about 12% of the people who were housed returned. And so we don't necessarily see that, but we have to recognize that as long as people are low income and or as long as housing costs are really high and wages are low, which is another way of saying that, you know, and childcare costs are high and food costs are high and all of that, as long as that's happening, people are always going to be at risk. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be rehousing people as quickly as possible and helping them get the supports they need to be successful.
Yes. You know, you mentioned that 12% return to homelessness, and that tracks with the programs that Homeward Pikes Peak provides in our Housing First program, which is permanent supportive housing. We maintain approximately a 90% housing stability rate. So that is why we put that word permanent in front of the housing program, because it means that once we take someone from the streets and we give them the rental assistance and the supportive services, they stay housed. And these are people with complex health problems, severe mental illness, and disabilities. We want them housed because it's the best place for them to thrive, but also gives back to the community so that we stop having a demand or a drain on community services.
Yes. Yes.
Hear, hear.
We won't pound on the table. We were told not to do that.
So we've talked a little bit about this homelessness problem. And do you have some current data that we could share to really give people context to what our city is facing right now?
I think one of the most recent and the most well-known data points is our point in time count. And we, you know, there are many reasons why that's not the best marker of homelessness or your progress. There are many reasons, right? It's a census done one time, the end of January, et cetera. But what we're seeing, what we saw this year, and part of the reason the numbers went up this year, and the numbers went up about 51%, was because we had more people counting,
yep.
Right? In one hand, that's we have a lot more people who are really interested in being connected and to this issue. But we're seeing larger numbers of people living unsheltered. And what was really alarming to me was the number of people who are now considered chronically homeless. Mm-hmm. There were, out of that 17, there were 1,745 people counted. 600 were identified as chronically homeless. And those are both people who were in shelter and living unsheltered.
Yeah. And thus define chronic homelessness. That means someone who has 12 months continuously outside or living in emergency shelter, someplace not meant for habitation, or someone who has 12 months over the course of 3 years.
Yeah, and a disabling condition. Right. And I think this is an indicator that we're not housing people quickly, right? Mm-hmm. People are remaining, I'll say it another way, people are remaining homeless for longer periods of time, especially people with these deep needs. And we have few programs that are able to accommodate people, especially if they have medical needs or serious mental illness. And so we're finding that people are remaining homeless longer. And the longer you remain homeless, the more trauma you're going to experience. Your health will worsen. We know that a lot of mental illness or behavioral health conditions worsen or actually start when people become homeless. It wasn't the mm-hmm. reason for their homelessness, but homelessness creates that, right?
It creates a sense of anxiety. You don't know where you're going to sleep. You don't know where you're going to get your next meal. You don't know when you're going to be able to resolve your challenges, get the mail for your vital government documents. Yes, homelessness creates trauma and anxiety. It could lead to many other health challenges as well.
And when we, you know, I'll sit in a lot of case conferencing within the city because we have a homeless outreach team. We have a homeless outreach program through the police department or parks department is engaged on issues of homelessness. Our downtown response team is engaged.
And the fire department.
And the fire department through the homeless outreach program. And a lot of the folks they encounter frequently, there are very few opportunities for competency restoration, for temporary or long-term housing. They may be restricted from shelter for behavioral reasons. And they go through that cycle of jail back out onto the street. And figuring that piece out, I think, is going to be really important to making a meaningful impact mm-hmm. on the number of people who are visibly homeless. I mean, we just don't have the recovery resources. You know, I routinely get calls from people who are trying, right? They're like, hey, I went to treatment. I'm feeling good again. I cannot find a place to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they're exposed to the same conditions or circumstances that contributed to their substance use.
Right.
You know, disorders to begin with.
And you mentioned that visible homelessness, and we have hidden homelessness problem as well. You know, you mentioned the point in time of approximately 1,700 individuals this year experiencing homelessness. But if we look at other indicators that identify homelessness when you apply for a public benefit, such as the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, El Paso County records that data, and it exceeds 4,500 people. I think it may be closer to 5,000 people identified as homeless when they're applying for their food assistance program.
It's actually higher. It's over 6,000 households representing about 8,450 people.
That's incredible.
It's incredible. And it was, we have different data sources, right, that we sort of triangulate to try and understand the extent of the problem in our community. And that SNAP enrollment information. We just published in a report that was produced by Data Driven Economic Strategies, Dr. Tatiana Bailey, to really help us understand both the extent and the number of people who are at risk
yeah.
in our community. And we hadn't really been leaning into that SNAP number. It's a 144% increase since 2019 in the number of people self-reporting homelessness. Now, as you know, they're probably couch surfing or living doubled up. Mm-hmm. They might not all be unsheltered, but there's no advantage to checking that box. You don't get more benefit. You don't get a faster benefit.
No.
And so really, that is tracking that we're just seeing more and more people reporting.
Yeah. And that truly does speak to the community being at risk. If we have nearly 8,000 individuals, this is adults, children, toddlers, babies, that impacts education, it impacts, you know, their ability to participate in school, impacts people's ability to work and maintain that. And if they can't work, then they can't generate income to pay the rent that they all want to have a home over their head, roof over their head.
Yeah. In my conversations with people in the community, people often just think of homelessness as that visible population. And a lot of what we do is we respond to complaints about visible homelessness. It is problematic, right? I mean, we've talked about it. You mm-hmm. can't have people, you know, pursuing life-sustaining behaviors on the streets, in the parks of Colorado Springs, or anywhere for that matter. So it is a challenge, but it seems to overshadow all of what's happening behind the scenes. And if we begin to recognize that this is more of a systemic problem, our solutions might be different.
Yes. Yeah. We have to look upstream.
Yep.
And pull those babies out of the river upstream rather than when they're approaching the rapids. Well, let's talk about the city and the role in housing. So, you know, the city of Colorado Springs doesn't run a housing program. You don't have case managers placing people into housing. So what does the city do to support the housing ecosystem in our community?
Yeah, I think it's important to recognize that your city government really reflects the values of your community. And our community, which is very much believes in market-driven solutions, what we try and do is create the conditions to support housing development. We do that through, you know, rapid response and planning, through how our community is zoned, looking at, you know, opportunities to expand uses in zones. We provide some incentives. We rebate certain fees that are charged, especially for affordable housing. We'll rebate certain fees that the city charges developers. And then we receive some federal funding that is for low-income housing through mostly through the Home Investment Partnerships Program, which looks like it will continue to be funded. So excited about that.
Thank
because
goodness.
it was at risk at one point. We do some work from site prep and things through the Community Development Block Grant, and there may be some changes to that program with some changes at the federal level to allow us to invest more of that into housing development. We also receive private activity bonds that we partner with developers on low-income housing tax credit projects. So we have some bond cap that's administered by the state, allocates it to us to administer at the local level. The county also receives some cap. And we work with low-income housing developers. So there's two projects right now, Bradley Ridge, which is down in southeast Colorado Springs, which is over 300 units, 60% of the area median income, which is around, for a family of four, is going to be around $64,000, I think. And that one has on-site childcare.
That's going to be amazing.
Yeah. So with the early connections. And then another project that's kind of embroiled in some, there's some neighborhood dispute up north called Royal Pine, which is 232 units for 30% to 70% AMI. So 10% of the units there will be at that very low income level. And those are really hard. Mm-hmm. They're really hard to develop because they just don't pencil out in
right.
terms of the cost.
Yeah, when someone's earning at 31% of area median income, a single adult is earning approximately $27,000 a year. And that's someone who has a minimum wage job, maybe in a grocery store or, you know, any number of minimum wage jobs. And they need housing close to where they work, because then that reduces the cost of transportation and other things that they might need. And these are the workers that we interact with every day when you go to a restaurant or grocery store or maybe even a medical office. So these are critical members of our community. So my bias is coming out right now. I'm getting all fired up that we need affordable housing for all members of our community. And it needs to be in diverse areas of our community, because we have job centers that we have now put all over our community, especially as our city expands to the north and east. This Royal Pines, isn't it up near like Villa Sports and the Briargate YMCA and like the St. Francis Medical Center up north? These institutions have employees that might need to live in an apartment at Royal Pines.
Yeah.
Okay, here, I'll here. Get off my high horse.
Well, and I think that, you know, we talk to, the city has a lot of conversations with communities, and Mayor Yemi has been really, that's been a priority of his, is to have these town halls and engagements. And what we hear from people who support affordable housing but don't support it in their backyards is that we build affordable, we need to be building complete communities. And I think a lot of people are like, hey, in the short run, what I see, and I agree with you 100%, like housing is a foundation. We have to have places for people to live. People who already have places to live are like, hey, I want like a park. I need some restaurants that I want to go to. I want to have walkability in my neighborhood. I don't want to have to drive. And we heard that from a lot of folks, that their concern about affordable housing was not, I mean, some people will be opposed to who they think is living there, and that's, we can talk more about that. But a lot of folks are just like, hey, I want to make sure that we're building neighborhoods mm-hmm. and vibrancy.
Right. I don't know this data point, maybe you do. Isn't the vibrancy of Colorado Springs pretty good? Like, don't most people live within 5 minutes of park or green space?
I don't know the answer to that. I know that was the vision, and I think most people live within some distance. But, you know, I would say there are parts of the community that are like rapidly developing, and the patterns of how people use those spaces might be different.
True. And then I think people get a little hung up on, well, that open field was where I walked yeah. my dog, or I liked that vista, but it was always privately owned and it was always zoned for something. And they're disappointed when an apartment building proposal goes up, which is a reasonable use by zoning in the city. Because isn't there some rule kind used by right?
Used by right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I am with you 100% on all of that. A lot of these are used by right. It's just interesting when you really sit down to try and break, like talk with neighbors. And it depends. It's very different. This community is very different culturally, depending on where you live. Like the West Side is going to be very, very different than the northern part of Colorado Springs. And we found that in the conversations we had by sort of council district. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's just interesting when you start to really like, hey, because I'm like you, I'm trying to figure this out. Like, we need a lot of units. Mm-hmm. And what is it that neighborhoods need to be able to support? Is it education? Is it other community amenities? Is it walkability? What is it that if we could build complete, like real communities, vibrant communities, would get you to sort of lean towards more of these affordable housing? Yeah. The other thing is that I think apartments are new here. I live in an apartment right now, and I actually really enjoy it, but it's new for a lot of people. I mean, folks, I'm sort of a curiosity to a lot of my peers, right, who have their own homes, et cetera. Like, why are you living in an apartment? And there's a lot of good amenities in apartments. There are all the modern conveniences. I've never had air conditioning, so I have air conditioning. I've never had a garage. I have a, you know, my car is parked in a garage. So, yeah, I think there's a misunderstanding too about apartments, just because we haven't had
that's true
a lot of people living in them.
Yeah, the West is a little bit different, Colorado in particular. I agree. I've lived in apartments and different style of homes and row houses in Washington, D.C. So I really love that variety of experiences I have. And I want that variety available in my city, because I think it makes a city look interesting. I don't want to just drive through acres and acres of houses that every third one looks the same. I like having that variety of choice of where to live. I want my kids to have choices of where they can live. And that also translates to affordability.
Yep.
You know, the choices come at all different price points.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, you know, we've talked a little bit how Colorado is unique in Colorado Springs. You've had some vantage of seeing another city up close, but I also know that you compare communities across the nation for your work. So how is Colorado stacking up to some other communities?
You know, in Colorado, we're seeing an increase in homelessness across the state. We've seen increases in the Denver metro area. There have been some decreases in like Adams County. I think the city of Aurora saw some decreases. But overall, we're seeing increases. It's really difficult to benchmark cities because of there's a variety of factors.
True.
You know, politically, you know, again, if a city reflects the values of its community, how do you factor that into the benchmarking? So we do just, we follow a lot of trends across the state. I will say, I was talking to a funder about this recently, and his perspective was this, and I really appreciated it, is that, well, who cares if this community of the same size looks like this? What do we want for our community?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we need to begin, is like, what do we want for this community? And what does it take to get there? So even if we only had, you know, a handful of people experiencing homelessness, if this community said that is not tolerable, then what would we need to do to fix that? So that's really helpful. On the other hand, it's also good to look at some communities that are showing progress, especially around interventions. Two, I'll be meeting with some folks in Anchorage this week to talk about how they've brought that system-level leadership to their community to help address issues there, and with a lot of participation from funders. And then my Bloomberg Harvard fellow,
mm-hmm. She was wonderful, Elizabeth.
Wasn't she great? She is, she's now in Oklahoma City working in this space, so looking at trying to do some more comparisons there. And then, of course, San Diego recently, or actually, I shouldn't even say recently, for about 6 years has really focused on diversion. And San Diego and Colorado Springs are apples and oranges, right?
Sure, very different.
But what they have seen in terms of the progress they're making in reducing the number of people who are entering homelessness, right? We look at entries, active, and exits, and reducing the number of people entering homelessness through their diversion programs, which is largely problem-solving conversations before somebody enters shelter, and some flexible funding. A lot of people could solve their own homelessness if they could just get somebody to help them through that crisis and that conversation and some minimal funding.
Mm-hmm.
It might be a car repair. It might be buying groceries so that your roommate lets you back in, right? It might be a bus ticket back to family. It's all of those things. And that is a practice that we've started testing here in our region that I would like to see our community really build upon and really trust that low-income people, you know, somebody who grew up in poverty, we're resourceful people,
mm-hmm.
in how we meet our needs. I'll say it that way. And I think that we have to give a lot more, recognize the agency of people experiencing homelessness and their strengths and their abilities to solve to find their way out with the right person-centered support.
I love that. I love that person-centered approach. I think it's so critical. And something else you mentioned was how Colorado is increasing its challenge around homelessness. But this is a nationwide issue. We've Yep. had housing costs increase in Colorado dramatically over the last 5 years. So the rise in homelessness is directly correlated to cost of living increases and the cost of housing. So when we see someone fall into homelessness, often it's because they've had a couple of cycles of an economic hardship and they just get trapped in debt and they fall into homelessness. And then once they're experiencing homelessness, it's really hard to resolve those debts. They prevent them from renting apartments in the future. They have to find a way to pay off a couple $1,000s. And some of them are earning a job. Others are on a fixed income. How do you pay off a debt when you only receive $850 in SSI and you have to spend a third of that towards your rent and then paying for food and all the other things. Like you can, it's so hard to get out of that trap of poverty to resolve these problems once you fall into homelessness.
Yeah, I think it was the University of California, San Francisco, the Benioff Center on Homelessness. I don't think I have that name entirely right, but they did a big study of homelessness in California. And basically, a lot of people would not have become homeless if they could have just had $300 to $500 more per month. Mm-hmm. And when you look at affordable housing, what always strikes me is that the discounts aren't huge. There's this belief that people who are living in affordable housing are somehow getting something for free. But we're only seeing differences in rent of about, you know, $300 to maybe $600 for a four-bedroom apartment. So these are not huge sums of money that could prevent people from becoming homeless. Mm-hmm. And if you think about a shelter stay is $85 per bed night on average. Mm-hmm. So that's expensive. And if we're saying that, hey, people, if they $300 to $500 would help folks, I have a story that I've told a bunch of times, so I apologize if folks have heard this before, but when I was pregnant with my daughter, who is now almost, well, I won't tell how old she is, dates me, but I was seeking services. I'd been an AmeriCorps volunteer. I had coverage under that program, but it was the inaugural year of the program and COBRA didn't exist for volunteers at that time. It's changed now. And actually, I don't think AmeriCorps even exists anymore, but I think it was cut recently by this administration. And so I had Medicaid. And important when you're pregnant to have access
to important prenatal care.
Yes. Prenatal care. And so I went in to get like, okay, I need WIC, which is that Women, Infants, and Children's Program. And what about, it was food stamps at the time. And what I found was that I was somebody, I had a college degree, I had some experience, very capable, right? Just pregnant and a little bit sick with that pregnancy. And I just needed a little bit of help. But what was happening was some of those programs were, the requirements were so onerous that it shifted my focus from figuring out how to be like fully self-sustaining, stabilized, right, healthy, and move forward in my life. And I found myself having to submit reports, income qualifications, interviews, get rid of your car. It all felt like it was a trap. Mm-hmm. And so I was fortunate to have a friend who loaned me $4,000. And that's what it took to keep me out of some of those programs so that I could have my baby, be healthy, have stable housing, get back to work. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have to take advantage of all those programs. And I see that with people who are trying to manage multiple programs. Mm-hmm. It can be almost a full-time job just to manage that.
Yeah. I have a story of a client I spoke with last month, and she and her husband are in our permanent supportive housing program, and they've been clients for maybe 6 or 7 years. They've struggled, the mom has struggled with her mental health for probably over a decade. They experienced homelessness in this community for several years before they were selected to move into an apartment, and now we provide rental assistance. The husband works full-time. They have a school-aged child. Her mental health is pretty difficult. She's struggled to get the verification of disability so that she can receive that SSDI that would help them support the family. She's really unable to work. And when I sat down with her, she's so afraid about what's coming in 2026 with the changes to some of the supplemental programs that their family utilizes. The biggest one is Medicaid, because right now she can go to a psychiatrist and she can receive some therapy. And at different times they have had food stamps, but right now they make too much money to receive any food assistance. So they're relying on local food pantries and this HUD Continuum of Care Rental Assistance Program that they're in. And if she, as a quote, looks like an able-bodied adult, cannot get a job or has difficulty with that follow through because of her mental illness, the whole household's at risk of losing Medicaid. So what we have been talking with her about to allay some of her anxiety is that you have a case manager who's helping with you every month, we will assist you in this upcoming requirement to verify that you are job seeking, to also work with her more aggressively to establish this disability, which we see is pretty clear, but we need her paperwork and her application needs to be approved, which often takes multiple applications to succeed. And this is really scary. And this is just one of the 105 households that we're supporting right now. And I know we have the majority of our households are fretting that there may be reductions to the HUD Continuum of Care program and Medicaid as their main source of support for health insurance to, for them to access doctors and mental health services is at risk now.
Yeah, Medicaid is such an important safety net. Mm-hmm. Or just we could just talk about it as, you know, health insurance.
It's health insurance.
It's an important type of health insurance. You know, in California, I'll be curious to see the studies on CalAIM, which was their Medicaid transformation. And I worked a bit in that training folks in how to implement some of the wave, what they're called waivers, so you can get use Medicaid for different reasons. But things like, you know, they're paying for rent. They're paying for some basic furnishings because, you know, you get an apartment, you need a place to sleep. They were paying for care coordination, like an enhanced care management for people who have really deeper needs in the hopes that those investments would actually reduce the cost of care mm-hmm. for folks in Medicaid.
Yeah. I'm so grateful that the state of Colorado has sought out that waiver so that we can use some Medicaid funding for supportive housing activities. Doesn't sound like it's as diverse and going to be as helpful as what they did in California, but we will be able to use some Medicaid dollars for the case management services that we provide to our clients who are in supportive housing. Well, it feels like we could talk a lot more. We have a lot to say on this topic. But I wanted to get to maybe the good things that are happening. Do you see collaboration between the City of Colorado Springs and service providers and our continuum of care? And like, where are we headed in the next year or so?
I think there are lots of bright spots. I mean, I feel like there's more people engaged than there have been in the past. You know, I did this work here for, starting about 12 years ago. And this particular work in homelessness. I just feel like there are a lot of people engaged. In some respects, I feel like years ago, we rallied together and we built the Springs Rescue Mission campus, which also sort of launched the whole having exits, right? With permanent supportive housing and the toolkit and groups like Homeward Pikes Peak. Now, nonprofit providers are building permanent supportive housing. This is an incredible change in our community. That's super exciting. Testing some new programs like Diversion. There's been the transformation grant that Changeline received. There's also Built for Zero, which is a methodology and a movement for ending homelessness by counting not the number of people that are being served, but counting down the number of people experiencing homelessness and looking at real-time data. So I think we've got a lot of the tools. There are some challenges we're going to face. It's a little bit bumpy right now. The continuum of care, which is that broad group of stakeholders committed to ending homelessness in a community. The system lead for that organization, which is Changeline, is transitioning out. So who leads that work going forward? The city, I've been participating in that. You know, the city years ago helped to bring the continuum of care into compliance with the federal government so that we could continue receiving our dollars. So we're more deeply engaged again. Providers, we're starting to talk more with providers, talking more with funders about how do we create a better system-wide response with using real-time data and accelerating housing exits. So I think that's all positive. I will say there does feel to be right now sort of a lot of people doing really good work, but not well coordinated as a system. Like individual organizations are well coordinated and know each other, but as a system and a system-wide approach, I think that we need to do more work there.
Yeah.
And this will be a challenging time to transition this. We're a unique region in that our continuum of care is one county. It's El Paso County. and others, you know, Denver is the Denver Metro or the Metro Denver Homeless Initiative is 7 counties. Northern Colorado is 2 counties. The balance of state, I think, is like 44 counties. So we're really unique and we want to keep this uniqueness. We're also a unique city in the region, second largest city. We're kind of, you know, the
little engine that could.
Yeah. And, you know, we're different than Denver. We look at things a little bit differently here. So I think we need to lean into that as a community and what that's going to look like.
Yeah, I agree. I'm optimistic about the collaboration moving forward. I was really grateful that last month the mayor hosted a meeting with programs and organizations, CEOs, to come together and talk about what can we do differently. And the energy in the room was palpable. The commitment to collaboration and the commitment to working on this, the data that informs us and also helps guide our response in the future. So I'm really hopeful that we can see some real progress in the next 6 to 12 months. And I also have to remind the community that it takes time, that change is hard, mm-hmm. building housing is very slow, but there are a lot of things that citizens can do in the interim that I would hope that they open their mind to. Being more of a yes in my backyard,
yep.
voting for members of our community at city council or county commissioner that support the creation and the maintenance of affordable housing in the community, but also to be a supporter, maybe be a volunteer, be a donor to the many organizations that are working to address homelessness in Colorado Springs.
Well said, Beth.
Well, thanks. Thank you so much for coming. I know I have more questions, but we're really out of time. So maybe we'll have to have a part two in the next couple of months.
I always enjoy talking with you, Beth.
Thank you. Well, thanks to everyone for listening to A Place for Everyone. I will provide some more information about the City of Colorado Springs Housing and Homeless Response Department in our show notes. And if you would like more information about Homeward Pikes Peak, feel free to reach out to us through our social media sites or directly to our main office. You can find us on the internet at homewardpp.org. Thank you and have a great day.